into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
bit
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Phillies win a big game against the Brewers on Labor Day, their best win of the season against the team with the best record in baseball. Does it mean anything? If so, what does it mean? I think it does. And the Phillies have two more games against Milwaukee here to finish up the week. Joining me here on this edition of the Roundtable, Justin Clue from Baseball Prospectus, and of course, our Hitting Season podcast over at the Patreon, The Dirty Inning and Absolutely Hammered. Follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue, and soon to be author of a fantastic new book that's coming out. Can't wait to read it, Justin. Again, for folks who haven't listened in a little while, maybe missed the last podcast that you and Liz did, how can people get the new book?
Summer of the Cheap Wieners. From Brookline Books. It's available on the Brookline Books website right now. You can pre-order. It will be out in February 2026 is the target release date. And yeah, it's about the 1941 Phillies. And when people say, why would you write about the 1941 Phillies, a team that lost 111 games? The answer generally is that I read a lot of baseball books growing up. And the Phillies were not in a lot of those books. And then getting older, I realized it was because they were such a terrible team for so long. And so I wanted to talk about a team that had a bad season. And that was just kind of the story. Not that they had a bad season and recovered, or they were an underdog that eventually figured it out. No, they lost a ton of games and they were bad the whole time. And the backdrop of the 1941 season is also that there's just a ton of historic baseball events that happen in that season, with Joe DiMaggio's hit streak being the number one thing. And so the book is about framing what the Phillies were doing while Joe DiMaggio was doing possibly the most famous baseball thing that has ever happened in baseball history. So that book will be available next February, and you can pre-order it now from Brookline Books.
It's really going to be it's a fantastic book. I got to read an advanced print of it, and I'm looking forward to getting the good one in my hands and featuring it behind me here on the dais, I guess is what we'll call it, the bookcase behind me, whatever it is. But Justin, game one on Labor Day. I know everybody on Labor Day was gathered around the television set for the 4:10 Eastern Time afternoon start, and maybe the best baseball game of the season that the Phillies have played, just in terms of sheer excitement as well. I mean, you talk about a game that felt like it was a playoff game, a true test of what this team can do in October. And their come from behind 10-8 win over the Brewers was easily their most impressive of the season. I don't see any way there's another game that was more impressive. Now, if you talk about a full series, yes, the Phillies have had more impressive series. We talked about that Blue Jays series. We've talked about the Rangers series. We'll see how things shake out in Milwaukee. But in terms of one game, Justin, I feel like this game showed fans who may doubt whether or not this team has the grit, has the fortitude to get through a tough playoff series, to win a tough playoff game where you're getting kicked in the stomach repeatedly over and over again by a team that just won't die. The Phillies outlasted a Milwaukee Brewers team that certainly in that first game looked as good as advertised.
Absolutely. And who the Phillies were playing in this game is, I think, one of the most key parts of the context, in that, and there's no secret that the Milwaukee Brewers have been the hottest team in baseball for weeks and weeks now. And we've kind of mentioned them offhandedly, aware that it was happening, and talked about how, you know, end of the day, I don't think that this is a team that you generally have to be afraid of in like a, oh, this team is just unbeatable kind of way. I feel like this is a team that is endearing and very good and playing very well. And their whole personality is like, oh, we do the little things right. But any team that does the little things right and then also has other things going on to its advantage is going to have an advantage over the Milwaukee Brewers. And I think the Phillies aren't a team that does the small things right every time, for sure. But they are a team that when they do those things, they can also capitalize on doing those things. And they've done them enough this year to be, you know, 18 to 20 games over 500 for like a lot of the season here. So seeing them play the Brewers, and in a game that I definitely went from thinking they're going to lose this game to they're going to win this game a record number of times this year,
right?
Swinging back and forth to being absolutely sure of what the outcome was going to be. That in the end told me that, A, this was a really I'm going to say well played game, even though there was, you know, an error was key to one of the developments in it, but still a very well played game by both teams playing each other. It was very much a playoff game, and it was very much a game that tells you that the Phillies can win more games like this in the future, because they had to really do a lot to win this game, which is, I think, one of their biggest issues this year, is just watching them do what feels like enough, and then it winds up not being enough, and then they have to find a way to fight their way out of it, and they don't always do that. They don't always seem like they have the arms in the bullpen or the offensive capability to like come back after scoring a lot early. They don't like always think, oh, we got to score in another inning again. Like they have trouble with that. But the word Rob Thompson's always using is resiliency, and that's what he used to describe them after this game. And at this point, it's undeniable. Like, that is an aspect of this team in that, yeah, sometimes they're not going to come through and win that game, but they're also totally capable of doing it. And they proved that against the hottest team in baseball in a game where they were like schedule wise, not an advantage at all. Nope, having flown in and gotten into Milwaukee in the early hours of the morning, shouldn't have even been playing. The series should have started today instead of on Monday, but that's how it worked out. And they still managed to come back multiple times and win the game after different instances where it seemed like, okay, well, this is just a loss. That just makes it all the more impressive all the way through, all throughout, and the who they were getting all the benefits from and what they were able to do even after going down. It was just endlessly impressive. And I'm totally with you. It was the best and most impressive win of the year.
Liz Rocher, the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal, also joining us here. Follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Liz, yes, this game, unbelievable on Labor Day. And we're just talking about, like, you know, what an incredible job by the Phillies. I mean, to keep coming back the way that they did, I truly didn't expect it. Like, maybe once with this offense the way it is, you thought, okay, you know, they overcame the early deficit 4-0 and then 5-1. You know, they somehow, you know, they do all the little things right in those middle innings, those two sacrifice flies, moving guys over, guys scoring from first base on doubles down into the corner. Like, you just don't see that with this team all that often. And the Phillies did all of that, but then the Brewers just kept punching and kept answering, and you're just like, how? I don't think this offense has another one of those innings in them. They only have one or two of those a game, maybe. Like, can they do it again? And they did it again against a really good team, against really good relievers who haven't given up anything this year. I mean, the Milwaukee closer hadn't been scored on in 17 straight appearances before the ninth inning on Monday. So, I don't know, your thoughts on what we saw on Labor Day?
I mean, it was a big win. And as you and Justin said, it was the biggest win of the season. We had to do that thing where we turned it on and then they went down like 5-0. And we're like, well, this is obviously awful. We're not going to waste the rest of our afternoon on this game. And so we turned it off and they started winning. And we're like, now we can't turn it back on. And so I'm like following game day and looking at everything and seeing like names like Harrison Bader and Brandon Marsh, again, doing the good things that you want them to do. I think Harrison Bader's probably more of a full-time player now than Brandon Marsh, but like they're both doing the things that they need to do in the opportunities that they're given, especially Brandon Marsh, who's just been on the money, like at least for the last month. He's been so good. It was really gratifying to see them do all the little things right to, you know, like play a full game, like not just be great on the offense, not just, you know, be great on defense, not just, you know, anything. It was they played the full game when they had to, because the starting pitching and none of the pitching really was there, you know, for them to hold on to.
Right.
The offense had to be good. They had no choice.
They did. Taiwan Walker was not very good in this game. The bullpen gave away a couple of leads in this game. There was, of course, the inexplicable error by Bryson Stott that allowed the Brewers to tie it up. I mean, that was shocking to the core.
What was that?
I mean, even Thompson said his jaw dropped, because I don't think Stott's made an error since April. I mean, so it was just inexplicable. And you couldn't even get mad at him. It's just like, how did that happen? And to overcome those kicks to the stomach over and over again, that's more resilience than I think. It's such a contrast to how we felt about things after the New York series, because what the complaints were from the fan base and from us is that when they went into New York and played the way they did, especially in that final game, it didn't look like they had a whole lot of heart left. Like, it just didn't look like they had a whole lot of fight left in them. And then so, but then they play the way they did against Atlanta over the weekend, and they go into Milwaukee and win that game after being down. And in a bizarre way, the schedule works too. Like, you go in on Labor Day, you get there, like Justin said, at 1 a.m. because you're playing Sunday night baseball going into a day game the following day on Labor Day. That's just
on
really,
Labor Day.
Yeah, on Labor Day. It's an awful schedule. And then you have off on Tuesday. You could have just mailed it in once Taiwan Walker gives up the 5 runs early and you're facing you win the Taiwan Walker Mizorowski matchup. Like, how does that?
You're facing the little boy who stole Christopher Sanchez's spot on the All-Star team.
Right.
I mean, that's got to be demoralizing.
The little boy.
I mean, you know, you're talking about what the difference is in what this team was able to do. I think we all know it, and nobody's saying it.
Yeah.
And that this team got back its most important piece for this game.
Here it comes.
In Garrett Stubbs.
Yeah, there it is. I knew it.
The greatest backup catcher in baseball history.
Third string catcher now.
I don't care about that. That's a backup. It's backup. Hearing him talk about coming back to Philadelphia, and he's like, oh, we got something to eat within the first 30 minutes of being here. This is a guy who is back in a non-toxic way, back on his college campus after graduating, and just loving every second of it. Just being like, it's been long enough that I miss it, but it hasn't been so long that everything's changed. He checks in with the leadership in the clubhouse when he gets there, and he's like, hey, are there any rules? Are they like, is there anything new that I need to, like, I don't want to do anything that's out of line? They're like, no. He's like, great, I'm not aware of any rules. Let's go nuts. You see him playing in that game, running the bases, going back in the dugout, and then you're just like, oh, man. Who knows what his future is and what roster decisions will be made, but it's great to see him out there. And it just, you know, it's not like they're not a fun team, but they made a point by their own admission to be more businesslike this year. And seeing the dimension and just like the enthusiasm and the joy that Garrett Stubbs brings is just, it's enjoyable to me as a viewer. So I love seeing it. And, you know, it's not the reason they won, but it was a great component of this very excellent win that we're describing, is that Garrett Stubbs got to be a part of that, an active part of that, and you got to see him run through the dugout, high-fiving everybody after scoring a run in a huge key spot.
Go ahead, run.
This is when we talk about different moments where I thought different outcomes were inevitable, you mentioned the Bryson Stott error. I mean, that was the point where I was like, all right, well, that's the exception to what is a rule, which is that Bryson Stott is an excellent defender and is making that play 9.5 times out of 10. But he didn't make it this time, and that ultimately is going to be the undoing. And if you're able to overcome a moment like that, where it's not even something that, like, yeah, that's something that goes wrong for this team kind of regularly, it's something that's like, yeah, no, this is a rule being broken, that's a huge win. And again, I'm not crediting Garrett Stubbs with that. It's just great that he got to be a part of that.
He adds like a much needed dimension, I think, to this team, to the dugout. Not that they're not enjoying themselves and having fun, but it's just his natural energy, I think, is what has helped drive the Phillies the last couple of years. And having him back with that, like, just natural joy of loving where he is and loving the guys. And I love that he checked in and was like, are there any rules I don't want to break? Like, you know, should I not be wearing my shoes, or, you know, do we wear our hats backwards now?
Do we still have Navy Wednesdays in the clubhouse? Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, it's important to go over those things before you jump right back in.
Exactly. But, like, he adds, like, it's like an extra
fully
dimension.
Fully nude when he asked about Naked Wednesdays.
True. Just getting a head start on it. No, it's still here, Garrett.
It's not Naked Saturdays anymore. It's just Naked Wednesdays. I think it will help them intangibly. It's an intangible help for them down the stretch to have such a positive presence, because that's just what he is. He's a positive guy. I not that I had forgotten, but I'm like, wow, it really does make a difference having him around.
Hey, he's been doing great work down in AAA as well, by the way, managing that pitching staff and just being that presence that he is. I mean, he is... We don't have to spend the whole episode talking about him, but Garrett Stubbs is a valuable presence no matter where you put him in his organization. Yep. He's proven that 10 times over.
So another guy who's just been new to the team, and that's Harrison Bader, who had maybe the biggest hits that happened in this game. I mean, a couple of huge RBI doubles and then an RBI single that gave them some much-needed insurance, a second run in that ninth inning. Since coming to Philadelphia, he has an 872 OPS, a 137 OPS plus, two homers, six doubles, a triple. He's been worth 0.8 wins above replacement in just 26 games, about a month of play. He's been worth almost a full win above replacement, hitting .313 with a .385 on base percentage. I like to call him the anti-Austin Hayes. I think that's how I'm going to refer to him for the rest of the season. Anti-Austin Hayes, Harrison Bader, because this is what they desperately needed, somebody to come in and do this and to do it as a center fielder. You're right, Liz. He's not a part-time player. I know that there's this outfield rotation going on, and he's going to sit maybe once a week. I mean, I don't, but it shouldn't be more than that. I mean, I think they sat him over the weekend because he played eight straight games. Yes. Rest him then. That's fine, but he really should be in the starting lineup every day. I don't care who's pitching. He should be in the starting lineup every day.
He's too valuable defensively. Not like he's not spectacular, amazing out there, but like he's in more than competent center fielder, which is something they have not had for a decent part of the season. They struggled with it last year. And having him there as an anchor and like hitting well for me is like a fabulous, wonderful bonus, you know, that he's been able to make a difference in the lineup and in games has been great. But I've just been thrilled to see his glove out there and know that he's going to take the right routes most of the time. The balls that should get caught are going to get caught and there won't be any freak accidents.
The Phillies had some like pretty okay defenders that were probably torn down by the overall outfield production offensively to this point, which is a very wordy way of saying they needed some improvements on offense or just in the outfield, just in general. And that kind of made the definition of an improvement a lot broader than maybe on other teams, where in that, like, add someone else and just kind of see what happens. And I know at the trade deadline, I made the comparison of it. Like, if all you were going to do was add Harrison Bader, I'd rather you add the Harrison Bader of relievers in addition to Johan Duran. But, like, obviously that view softened even before he had played a whole lot here. And Harrison Bader's reputation coming into this season was, yeah, you know, he's a guy who's not going to hit. He's not going to be your best hitter. You know, you
right.
might be looking at like a .230 kind of batting average, like a guy who's lower in your batting order. However, he's up there with the Kevin Kiermaiers and the Jacob Youngs of this world as far as like playing center field deftly, strategically, and in his own way. And that was illustrated in that Sunday night game against the Braves where they talked about like his specific, I believe they're crab-like, you know, approach to catching fly balls.
Yeah. Yeah.
And obviously that works for him. And that alone is an improvement on a lot of what the Phillies have available to them in the outfield. You know, they don't have totally incapable defenders, but again, there was room for improvement. And Harrison Bader improves you on that front as a center fielder specifically, which is a conversation we've had many times over the years as we watched guys like Adam Haseley and other candidates kind of like try to take over the role of not just an outfielder who's playing center field, but a center fielder. And I think Harrison Bader kind of embodies that role a lot more effectively than anybody they've had out there in a while. And for that reason alone, he probably deserves to be playing less as a platoon and more as a full-time player. And then you throw in the offense he's been able to give you from the past couple weeks. That is doing a lot for you. I mean, that this is exactly what you want from the guy you get at the trade deadline who, you know, maybe wasn't even playing this well before he got here, especially at a time when the Phillies have been adding a lot of guys who haven't been playing very well and they're banking on just getting better once they get here. Well, that doesn't always work. We've learned. I mean, the comparison you just made was Austin Hayes. That's obviously a textbook definition of a guy Dave Dombrowski added thinking he's going to be this, and he just wasn't for a lot of reasons, but he just wasn't that guy. Bader finally felt like not only is he capable of being that guy, but look, he's giving you surprisingly good offense, more potent offense, hitting around .300 since he's gotten here. And that's, you know, a huge deal. Obviously had big hits in this game that we're talking about, but also he just improves your outfield in general. And it's also just the Phillies' turn to have one of these deals work out.
So, love averages, my God.
this working out, I think, makes a lot of sense. He's the kind of guy that they've needed, and, you know, his approach is very distinct in center field, but like energy wise and offensive wise, he's not bringing like this, you know, very unique presence, but he doesn't have to.
I don't know if you've been reading, you know, there was a great article. I forget if it was, I think it was Lachlan, it's Philadelphia Inquirer reporter.
March.
Yes. Thank you. I apologize. I did name right out of my head, but I think it was her that wrote an article about Bader, about how his addition to the clubhouse is just really, he's kind of seamlessly fit right in with what they have right now. And you can kind of see, I think there is a unique personality that has joined this clubhouse and maybe given it a little bit of a jolt of energy that wasn't there before. He's a big game player. He's had big moments in the postseason. It's kind of nice to bring somebody in who I think has confidence. And he said it himself, like, when you're able to produce right away, it makes it so much easier to ingratiate yourself with the clubhouse and your teammates, something that Austin Hayes, unfortunately, wasn't able to do last year.
Yeah, and he has talked about the energy being a good match for him as well. And I like the relationship he's been able to forge with Brandon Marsh, where they were like, hey, Brandon, this guy's like kind of got your same sort of vibe. Like, what's going on there? And he's like, yeah, I just want us to be able to feed off of each other. He was saying, I read on Phillies Nation, he was like, yeah, I want us to be, and if somebody can bring Brandon Marsh energy and they can feed off of each other as this sort of self-sustaining, barking twin set of madmen, that's going to be really beneficial for the Phillies moving forward. So, yeah, this has been certainly more beneficial, the acquisition of Harrison Bader, than I certainly felt leading up to it. But, hey, you know, that's the folly of measuring trade deadline acquisitions as they happen. You don't know what's exactly going to unfold until the guys get in some games. And the games Bader's been getting in, he's been very, very good in for the Phillies.
It'll be interesting this offseason to see. And obviously, this month in October will tell a lot, but, you know, re-signing Kyle Schwarber is obviously the number one priority. JT Realmuto, his improved play, I think, moves him up the list in terms of re-signing a player. Maybe you give him a qualifying offer. But Harrison Bader now enters the conversation. If he really finishes the season strong, there's not a great center fielder on the free agent market. He'll probably get a multi-year deal somewhere if he continues to play like this. He could be a 4.5. He's already approaching 4 wins above replacement this year, which is you're a good player if you're doing that. You're a borderline all-star player if you're doing that. And, you know, he could be in the mid 4.5-5 region by the time the season's over here. So it'll be an interesting decision to see how the Phillies are going to allocate their funds this offseason, because it seems like you want to bring some different blood into the organization, I think, a little bit moving forward. But then you've got these three guys who you may need to re-sign this offseason. So,
I mean, your main outfield acquisition in free agency was what? Kyle Tucker? And he's had a really rough couple of weeks. So after that, I mean, you know, you're kind of just off to the races. A bunch of guys who already got traded at the trade deadline because they were going to be free agents this year. I mean, Luis Robert Jr., Cody Bellinger, like, you got a couple of names. But you're right that, like, as far as center fielders go, I don't know. It's kind of like a niche position at this point, because most teams are just putting like their fastest outfielder in center, and that doesn't really make you a center fielder.
No. What did you guys make? Obviously, the ninth inning was set up on Monday by a controversial call by the first base umpire Jim Wolf on a JT Realmuto check swing. If you watch the Brewers broadcast, you watch JT. Take that swing. Oh, he swung. Yeah, he swung. For sure, look at it. He went around. He might have. Like, if you look at it, it's like on the edge. I think it's probably more likely than not that he went around, but he didn't break his wrist. And if he went past the plate, it was by the narrowest of margins. Like, it really is. If you're down at first base, it's a 50-50 call. Like, there's no way you could say for sure, like, oh, you blew that. But obviously, Pat Murphy allowed the adrenaline of the moment, I think, also to kind of take over. And he got a little over his skis there and went after the first place umpire. He got kicked out of the game. And then Brandon Marsh follows with his big hit, his RBI double. And then Harrison Bader obviously drops one into right field. So I don't know. You know, Liz, I have criticized Rob Thompson for not getting more animated and at times getting, you know, sometimes I feel like a manager needs to get kicked out of a game to give his team a boost or to support a player or something like that. And he never takes the bait. He never, ever does it. Pat Murphy did in that game on Monday. And, you know, I don't know if that had any effect on what happened after that. The Phillies probably do exactly what they did anyway. But did the umps get the call right, Liz, on the check swing? That's what I really want to know. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm really reluctant to say, like, it sounds like a cop out, but like, you're right. It could have been either one. I would like to say that they got it right.
They got it right. They got it right, Liz.
Let's just say they got it right. They got it right. You're right. I should just listen to my heart. I'm listening to my heart now. And they did. They got it right. They got it right. I mean, and I feel like Rob Thompson unless one of his players are seriously about to get ejected, because he'll get between an umpire and a player most of the time. I would say he doesn't get between Bryce Harper and an umpire.
I don't know if he does. I really don't know if he does that.
Phillies players don't often get into it with umpires. Unless like a player is really getting into it and is getting into an umpire's face, it is like a half a second from being ejected. Thompson will let his players do what they need. He's never seen like the kind of guy who thinks he needs to get his players up. Like, he feels it's the player's responsibility, and I think the players feel that way too. They don't think it's the manager's responsibility to get them excited or, you know, light a fire under them or anything. Like, they're all grown up men. They know what they have to do. And that's kind of why they don't really ever get into it with umpires like that.
Do you think that makes him more or less of a player's manager?
I actually think it makes him more. He doesn't feel like it's less of a, I mean, a coach and a manager are essentially the same things, but in baseball, it's a really, the job of a manager feels a little bit different than that of a traditional coach. Like, a coach a lot of times is like a dad figure, and Rob Thompson has never wanted to be that for his players. Even when they were younger and there was daycare, that was never the dads were Bryce Harper or JT Realmuto. Like, I think he wants the clubhouse to have the players run the clubhouse. And the difference between him and Joe Girardi is that he's made that clear. He's like, this is your clubhouse. You have to run it. Like, who did Garrett Stubbs go to when he asked if there were new rules? He didn't go to Thompson. Why would he know? It's not that, you know, he wouldn't know, but like, you don't go to him if you want to ask a question about what's going on in the clubhouse. You go to the players. And I think his approach to all that is really indicative. He doesn't ever seem like the type of guy who'd be like, I need to go and light a fire to these guys, get them fired up, show them whatever. Like, Rob Thompson has the ability to get himself ejected if he ever feels like it. And he would. But he just never does that. He never feels the need to.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think that it makes him more of a player's manager. I would say, honestly, but that's where I would draw the line on being a player's manager. At a certain point, you're a manager. And that's managing your players pretty directly, is getting out there when you know a player who's important to your team winning the game is in danger of getting ejected. You get out there and you get in the way, and you take that ejection so that he doesn't. And everyone, you know, can see that you're doing that, and it's, you know, it's a nice thing for the players to see that you're going to be able to do. And you're right that if the Phillies kind of have a clubhouse and an environment where he doesn't need to do that to prove that he's a player's manager, I totally agree with that. I think that's a fair assumption. But I think there's a certain amount of managing that has to go into being a manager, and I think that is an aspect of it, that, like, you got to do that. However, I think we're right in saying that, like, the Phillies don't get in a lot of umpires' faces in the first place, so it winds up being largely a non-issue. To go back to the original question, however, I will say that I've seen what JT Realmuto did called a swing 1 billion times in my life. I think that is a swing, and I think he was out. And I think they missed it, and I think it's great. And I think Pat Murphy lost his mind because there's a certain amount of entitlement in the Milwaukee Brewers right now. And it's totally, totally, totally earned. They have completely earned that, and they should have it. However, there is an amount of entitlement in their fans and their players and their manager that they're just going to win the game. That there's going to be a way that they win the game. Whether they look like they're going to or not, they're going to win the game. That is such a healthy, good mindset for your club to have in September. Unfortunately, they had it largely in August so far. We'll see how long it lasts in September. That being said, yeah, I think that's where a lot of that anger and frustration came from, was that, like, oh, no. And also, they had a 5-0 lead and, like, could have won that game at different points, same as the Phillies could have. So there's plenty of frustration there. And if you want to hinge that, if you're anybody on the Brewers side, whether you're the players, reporters, fans with blogs, whatever, you're going to frame that around the controversial decision of not saying JT Realmuto swung because of exactly what it led to seconds later. The kind of thing we've seen happen to the Phillies countless times when calls haven't gone their way this year. This is not the product of some vast pro-Phillies conspiracy, but JT Realmuto,
will there never be one?
He swung at that pitch based on most definitions of what a swing is. But I'll go even broader and go back to my point that I've brought up a couple times, which is I don't think any umpire in the history of Major League Baseball has ever gotten the appeal sign and known what they were going to say. I think it's been like a doctor hitting you with a hammer on the knee, and they've just been like, whatever their body did first was the call. Yeah. It was not, oh yeah, I was paying really close attention to that and then responded. No, you've seen clips of umpires who were just like, oh, me? Swing for sure. Yeah, swing. Like, yeah.
It's the equivalent of a policeman looking on their phone when they're standing somewhere they're ostensibly supposed to be guarding.
I'm not saying this umpire did that. I'm just saying in a lot of cases, it's just reactive and instinctive what they do with their hands. I swear, I have no evidence to cite for this, but I just feel like in my experience and what the actual thing is that they're trying to do, in more cases than not, it is a reactive response. That all being said, I think he swung. They could have called it a strike and you wouldn't really have had an argument to make. And if the Brewers want to make it about that, they can. But at the end of the day, there was a bunch of different times the Brewers could have won that game. Same with the Phillies. The Phillies found a way to win it.
Just in a phenomenal game. But I will say too, like watching Pat Murphy kind of go off there, I have gotten upset at Rob Thompson for not showing more fire and getting himself kicked out of games to get his team riled up. And as I watched Pat Murphy get kicked out, the way it came through to me was that wasn't a great example to show to a young team in that particular spot. Like, you got to pick your spots there. And I don't think he was picking a spot. I think he was truly generally outraged at the non-call and just wasn't able to contain his emotions and got kicked out of the game. But I think, I don't think for a club like the Brewers, that's kind of young, doesn't have any real postseason experience among a lot of these young guys on the team. I don't know that was the best thing. I don't know that it was the best timing for that. That might have been a time for a little bit more Rob Thompson stoicism. I mean, sure, you get on the dugout and you can yell a couple of things, but, you know, maybe not take it so far, because it seemed like he unraveled, and then not long after that, the Brewers kind of unraveled a little bit, you know? And so, you know, maybe a lesson learned there for the Brewers, and maybe a lesson learned for me when I want Rob Thompson to kind of go a little crazy because it would make me feel better. Might not actually be what's best for the team. We see Rob Thompson have that 3-game series with the Mets, and the Phillies are able to put it behind them as soon as they got on the plane and came home to Philadelphia for a series against the Braves, and then go to Milwaukee on a short turnaround and beat the team with the best record in baseball, coming back after multiple kicks to the crotch during the course of that game on Monday. So maybe there's something to be said for the more stoic approach of the veteran manager Rob Thompson with a veteran team like the Phillies, but I don't know. What are your thoughts on the Brewers too, real quick, by the way, as we just, I mean, just, it's just one game we saw from them. We'll get a better look at them here on Tuesday and pardon me, on Wednesday and Thursday, as they finish up the series. But I've been skeptical. And I still am skeptical that this is the best team in baseball necessarily, Justin, but I got to say that looks like a team that, there are no easy outs in that lineup. Like, you got to really work to get those guys out. They make a lot of contact. They have good at bats. In that Jose Alvarado inning, I think it was Jackson Chirio who worked a long at bat, fouling off multiple 100-mile-an-hour pitches from Jose Alvarado to the point where Alvarado just ran out of bullets in that particular at bat. I mean, those are the kinds of things the Brewers do, and it was it's a good lineup to navigate. And usually, their bullpen's a whole lot better than what they were on Monday. I wouldn't expect to see that again on Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, they are a deep team, it feels. They are a comprehensive team, and there's a lot of ways they can beat you. And it's easy to see, you know, we knew going in that this was a team that, you know, they weren't just hot. They are also good. They're a good team that has been playing hot. And for all the reasons that you said, they make a lot of contact. They make a lot of good contact. They have a lot of guys who can barrel up on the ball. But like, there's not a lot of, there's not a lot of spikes in the productivity. I feel like the Brewers are a really steady team, which is a strength for sure. It's also, you know, something that like if a couple of these guys start spiraling, then I don't think it's going to be tough to see like the whole of them going together down that road. But at the same time, this is a team that's got strengths pretty much everywhere you look. And that's a tough team to beat. That's a tough team to be in September. When a lot of people are dealing with injuries and absences, and the Brewers are dealing with those too. And that's part of why they've been considered so good, is that at their hottest, they were without Jackson Chourio. They were without Reese Hoskins. They were without some key members of this offense and key members of this team. And they still managed to put up the best numbers in baseball. I mean, they really, I think they're out of that kind of like dead sprint they were in, but that went on for a long time, and it put them pretty firmly ahead of teams like the Phillies, who have been playing really well for most of the season, ahead of the Dodgers, ahead of the Padres, ahead of everybody. So everybody's like fighting for their 80th win, and the Brewers are already like, yeah, we got 85. We're moving on. So there's a reason they were able to get that hot. And, the thing that always brings them back down to earth for me is that the hot streak they were on was a product of that. It was a product of them being very good, you know, fundamentally, and having this great core that's evenly distributed talent up and down the lineup. But at the same time, they were also benefiting from just being a really hot team. And, you know, that's a great team to be, but timing wise, it doesn't always work out for you. And for the same reason the Brewers are very, you know, good, is that they're also very beatable. They're gettable, and there's vulnerable points within their strengths, like the bullpen that we saw. That's like, normally this is very good, but the guys out there aren't necessarily long-term successes. They're current successes, and you're not necessarily going to be able to build around some of the talent that's in the bullpen. You're not necessarily going to rely on all of the bats going off. I mean, I think the Brewers are about as surprised of Bryce Terang's success than anybody recently. So that's an aspect that is like, welcome to the team if you're that team, but also an area where you're like, all right, well, how seriously are we taking this if you're a team that's going to be playing this team in the weeks ahead? And while I don't want to ever see the Phillies play at Citi Field ever again, I do take a lot of comfort in them being able to beat a team like the Brewers, who has been the talk of baseball for so long, and not just beat them, but beat them like three times in one game. That shows, I feel, almost more than you saw from this team in three games against the Mets.
Yeah, Liz, maybe they learned something from that series against the Mets. You know, maybe they did go into that series against the Mets with a big lead, and they knew, hey, you know, if we win one of these games, we'll still be in really great shape. And it's possible, you know, they talked after that series about, you know, maintaining an edge, or, you know, taking, I forget what the expression Bryce Harper used, but, you know, it was, maintaining their, you know, their focus, this sort of thing. And I wonder if, you know, maybe that helped spring something into their heads, or get them, you know, fired off, find some reserve down deep that maybe wasn't there in the second half last year when they looked kind of sleepy and taking things for granted, maybe. And, you know, I hope that that's maybe going to be the clarion call in September, you know, because you go from that series in New York where they showed very little fight, and now, you know, against the Brewers, we'll see again two more games, but showing a lot of fight against a good Milwaukee team. Your thoughts on the Brewers also?
You can only hope after that Mets series they all got together and said, well, that sucked. Let's not do that again. And they sort of agreed, yeah, we got to play all nine innings. We can't really give up. We have to do all the little things right. And playing, getting four games of practice against the Braves certainly helped them, at least on Monday against the Brewers, who, I mean, as Justin said, you know, had been very good, but they don't recently have a great record in September. They've got great records in August.
They're 4-6 in their last 10, by the way. So
they're 4-6 in their last 10. And looking at their, I remember doing this for a Friday edition of Hit and Season a few weeks ago. The Brewers, historically, for like 3 of the last 4 years, have incredible August records and relatively middling September records. So I don't know what it is about them that makes them all fired up in August, and then they just sort of crash, not crash and burn, but kind of lose that mojo in September. I mean, maybe the Phillies are hitting them at the right time, but they really did play a complete game, especially after the Brewers came back several times. Like, yeah. Just like it, just as Justin said, I was like, well, they're not coming back from this. You know, wait another 2 innings. Well, they're certainly not coming back from this. Oh, wait a minute. They've come back from this twice now, and now they've won.
Yeah.
Their ability to sort of mentally move on from that Mets series, hopefully, I mean, if they didn't take anything else from that, hopefully it's that they took. They're like, all right, we got to put that behind us. You know, baseball players definitely need to have the memories of goldfish in order to play. Because you have to put behind you not just the last game, but like your previous at bat, which happened like a half an hour ago, 40 minutes ago. If you struck out and it was a hittable pitch, you're like, well, that was awful. And you can't go up to the plate thinking, well, man, did I suck last time? You have to put it all behind you. And if the Phillies unlock one thing, hopefully it's that. It's their ability to play like goldfish and put it behind them and put their best foot forward every single time they're out in the field, you know, at the plate, you know, on the mound, and just sort of erasing what came before if it doesn't help them.
Yeah, you're never out of a game.
The Brewers are an offensive success this season. They hit, like John said, they hit for a lot of contact, and they're great at getting on base. In fact, this year they have the highest amount of hits in the National League. The Phillies are number two. Surprisingly enough, they're like right behind them. So like they are like volume wise, they can overcome you with that. They don't hit for a lot of power. No. For a team that hits as well as they hit and is at the top of the list for a couple of offensive categories, they don't have a lot of power. They have less power than the Phillies, even when the Phillies have suffered their power outages. The Brewers are down in like the middle of the pack as far as that goes. And maybe that comes from not having Rhys Hoskins around a whole lot, but we also know firsthand how streaky Rhys Hoskins is, even as a power hitter. So that's also an area where the Brewers are a little unintimidating, is that, you know, they'll hit run, they'll get hits and they'll knock in runs. But as far as that, like that big booming guy who's going to come up and crush you with runners on base, they don't have that as much as a really high functioning offense has, you know, and they've proven that you can get away without that, that you can be a successful offense without that. But that is an area where they are lacking.
The Phillies entered Monday having scored more runs in innings 7 through 9 than any other team in baseball. They're fourth in runs scored in one-run games and second in runs scored in tie games. But I thought that was Charlotte Varnes of The Athletic had that.
Wow.
That this is a good late inning scoring team, which I would not have thought. I mean, just memory-wise and eye test-wise, I would not have said, yeah, the Phillies are great late in games. Like, it's the numbers are what they are. They do score late. Early in the season, they beat up on a lot of bullpens. Remember, they had trouble with starters and got a lot of runs late. But this was a special circumstance here against the Brewers on Monday. I did want to talk about the bullpen real quick, because it was a little shaky against Atlanta at times, but especially in this game on Monday. This is kind of, it worries you a little bit in the playoffs in a big moment like this. And some of these guys, you know, you're concerned about the swing and miss with some of these guys. Orion Kerkering is just off his game right now. He's allowed runs in 4 of his last 6 appearances. He's throwing a lot of pitches out of the strike zone. He goes through these stretches where it seems like he doesn't have confidence to throw the ball over the plate. And he's kind of in one of those little valleys right now after being unhittable for 2 months. David Robertson has looked amazing here in David Robertson 3.0. But you saw in that inning, in that 8th inning where the Brewers tied the game, he got 2 outs on 2 strikeouts, but then really was not able to put anybody away, loaded up the bases, and the Brewers took advantage of it. So just losing command, that felt very 2022 David Robertson. You know, that was just kind of like his MO, especially as the season wore on late into September. So just a little, he's been great, maybe just one bad outing against a good offense. Matt Strom has been good, but you know, I don't think he necessarily makes you feel like locked down Matt Strom. And then Jose Alvarado, he should have been out of the seventh inning, but the Stott error allowed the Brewers to score. But his command was also a bit shaky. You won't see him in the playoffs. And Tanner Banks is probably your most trusted non-Duran reliever right now, I would say, right? I mean, he's been able to wiggle out of some incredibly sticky situations. Bases loaded, nobody out, just gives up a run, bails guys out left and right, lefty, righty. I mean, this guy, I would trust him in the eighth inning of a game right now more than I would pretty much anybody else. Maybe, Liz, is he the most trusted reliever outside of Duran right now? I think he kind of is.
Now, over the last handful of games, definitely for sure. I would say Orion Kerkering's issues are kind of alarming to me because he had you know, one appearance where he could not find the strike zone with, you know, a map and a flashlight. He had, I think, a good appearance and then another really bad one. Like, that's super concerning to me because he'll miss the strike zone in on four or five pitches and then he'll do the same thing to the next batter. And if Rob Thompson puts Kerkering out there again and he's got one or two, like, he needs to have someone warming up if he's going to put Kerkering out there. He's got to have someone warming up when he's out there. And I know that might be a bad thing for his confidence, but it's a good thing for game planning and management. Because if he walks another two straight batters, you cannot let him face a third. Like, he's got to get it together. I don't know what he has to do, but they will need him down the stretch and in the playoffs. I'm not surprised, I guess, about Tanner Banks doing well. I'm concerned that it's not that it's all luck, but I'm wondering if some of that luck will run out at some point, because consistently wiggling out of jams isn't always just skill. It can also,
there's luck involved sometimes.
Yeah, there's a fair amount of luck involved in it, and I worry about that running out and turning it like the worst possible time. And so the Phillies just need one of these guys in the bullpen needs to get themselves together and remember how to pitch a ball into the strike zone, man. Orion, can you find the strike zone? Whew.
Well, the good news is yes, he can, because this is not the first time we've seen Orion Kerkering do this. Yeah. He is sort of a back and forth guy, and he's had, you know, stretches at different times where even coming off pitching well, he's looked like his command just isn't there anymore. Or he's not getting guys to chase out of the zone, which are both ways that are going to hurt him, and based on what he's able to do. So, not being a pitching coach, I can't tell you exactly what he's doing wrong, but I can tell you that in the past, he has corrected things and gotten back to a more effective level. And so the Phillies' best advantage here is that it's early September, and a guy like Orion Kerkering can still reconfigure and get himself back, because it's something he's done at least two or three times, I think, even since being a principal member of the Phillies bullpen. Because back when we were, you know, even just a month ago, talking about the secret success of the Phillies bullpen has come down to guys like Kerkering, Strom, and Banks pitching really well. Well, Banks has continued that success. Kerkering has kind of famously fallen off. And you're right about Strom. He's just, you know, one of those guys who'll get you two quick outs and then a walk and then a home run. And then suddenly you're like, well, wait, what just happened there? So I still like Matt Strom, but he is, he's really become, you know, less reliable at the moment. If you need a clean inning from a guy. And, you know, I think, again, we're talking about the Phillies bullpen, which has not always been a definable component of the team, and even when it has been, you know, we sometimes realize months later we've had the wrong idea about it. I mean, how long did it take people to talk about how good Tanner Banks has been? It feels like he was lumped in there with everybody else, and then somebody looked at the actual numbers and was like, hey, for the last couple months this guy's actually been very good. I think this is just another window in which guys like Strom and Kerkering have to be able to adjust. And that's been a strength of theirs in the past, is that they've been able to pull out of stretches like this and actually put together, you know, a bunch of scoreless outings in a row following that, and can resemble a reliable bullpen because, again, the pieces are there. Banks is out there and Duran is out there. Guys like Strom and Kirkering can still be strengths. Having a rough time of it can, you know, it doesn't have to be the end of the world. And, you know, we're not talking about it, but in that game where Taiwan Walker did not have it and gave up a bunch of hits and a bunch of runs, Phillies had to turn to the less popular members of their bullpen or the completely unexposed parts of their bullpen, all of whom did their jobs as well. And Tim Mesa and Daniel Roberts, like that's a key part of that game too. And that they managed to hold keep the Brewers mostly off the base paths and not let them score in what was essentially at that point garbage time. So that's not an easy job either.
I was going to mention Tim Mesa real quick because, you know, they picked him up off of waivers. He was injured most of the season, but had good numbers for Pittsburgh, has had good numbers in his career, 3.84 ERA, 313 strikeouts and 312 career innings as a left-hander. I mean, he could be a guy. I think he's going to be on the postseason roster. And I think he's going to get some innings.
I think he absolutely is going to be on the postseason. I totally agree. That when that acquisition went down, there were Pirates people and people who were just aware of Tim Mesa and not involved with the Pirates who were like, how did this happen? Why did they let him go? And why is he on the Phillies now? How did this exactly go down?
And that's
a great sign. That's exactly what you want to see from the guy who is joining your bullpen at a time when you could really use some fresh bullpen arms.
Right. The big name from that weekend was Walker Buehler being added to the team, and I know he's going to join a six right. man rotation coming in a couple of weeks. But I think Mays is going to
cannot remember that this happened for the life of me. Cannot.
No, I think Tim Mesa could be the guy we talk about when the season's over as having more impact than Walker Buehler.
Walker Buehler. I really look forward to doing an episode where we're mad about like four bad innings from Walker Buehler or something. Like, I not to be that guy, but like that's kind of where guys come to get better? Is that are we still really. Saying that?
I mean, I talked a little bit more about the Buehler thing on 1006 because it's obviously a statement about Andrew Painter as well, and the fact that they don't feel like he's a solution or he's
could totally be fine, you know.
And that's
it's
right,
whatever.
For this year,
exactly.
You know, that's it. All right, I do want to, now that we are into September and we have 1 month left in the season, I did want to ask you guys to give me some predictions on a couple of things that I have listed here. But just to mention, as we go into the game on Wednesday against the Brewers, the Phillies will enter with a 5.5 game lead on the Mets. The Mets, you talk about a schizophrenic baseball team sweeping the Phillies, and then it's almost like a trap game in the NFL. The Marlins come into town and they lose 3 out of 4. And the offense did pretty well against Miami, but the pitching staff was a disaster. So they just couldn't carry the momentum against the Phillies into that series against the Marlins. I think it was clear they expended so much mental and physical energy in that series, getting up for that series and getting it back to 4 games. They had nothing for when the Marlins came in. And now here they are in Detroit, team with the best record in the American, or the second best record in the American League, vying with the Blue Jays for best overall record in the American League. And they're just destroying Tigers pitching. 10 runs on Monday, 12 runs on Tuesday, 22 in 2 games, and winning the first 2 games against the Tigers team. That looked like a spot where I thought Phillies might be able to gain a game, or at least, you know, hold steady. And we'll see. Maybe they will hold steady and gain a game at some point here. But the Mets coming off that Marlins series, now winning a series against the Tigers in Detroit. It's impressive the way the offense is playing. It's impressive. So, yeah, we'll see if they can finish it off on Wednesday or not. All right, so I want to get these September predictions from you guys. 1 month left. Let's do this. Kyle Schwarber, of course, had the 4-home run game last Thursday. He has 49 home runs as we enter September. Will he break, Liz, Ryan Howard's record of 58 home runs?
Regular season home runs?
Yes.
Mm.
Will he hit 9 in September to 10 to break the record?
I'm going to say no. I think he might come close, maybe at the most tie it, but he's been a little cold lately. Even with that 4-home run game, he's been a little cold.
He has been.
And I feel like maybe people are putting a little too much pressure on him for it. And so I'm going to say no, and I think that's totally okay.
Absolutely, it's okay. I mean, if the season he's already had is incredible.
Seriously.
But, Justin, will he break Ryan Howard's record?
Well, I'm going to say, I'll say yes. I feel like if, because my thinking was the same as Liz's coming into this, thinking that, like, I think he'll get close, but not do it. But if he's capable of getting close, then he's capable of doing it. And September isn't historically his worst month for home runs. It's also not his best. His best was this past month, honestly. And as you guys said, you know, the absolutely, you know, power of the sun that he was hitting with did drop off a bit. But I also don't think that means he's done. Like, I don't think Kyle Schwarber's tapering off just because he doesn't hit a home run in a series or goes hitless even in a series. I think it just means, you know, he's waiting for his next chance to homer. Schwarber was the guy whose comments after that Mets series that kind of stood out the most to me, and that he was just kind of like, all anybody was talking about in our circles was like, oh, what does this mean? And like, how bad is this? And he kind of reiterated what the Phillies always think, which is just like, yeah, you know, and we have a game today that we're also going to try to win. And those games didn't work out and that sucks, but we're not going to be bothered by that. We're going to go out and try to win today. And it's not like the most special or distinct thing, but it's a nice reminder, I think, for people to hear that, like, a team that has been pretty outward with like, hey, we're going about this very businesslike this season, and we're not really interested in all the outside noise. Remember, like, that's like a real thing. And they managed to do that without becoming this like boring, you know, quiet team. They're a team that operates on that level, and Schwarber operates on that level. And I think he's fully capable. If he needs to hit like 12 home runs instead of 10, I think he is fully capable of that, probably this year more so than any others. So yeah, I'll say, yeah, I'll give it to him. I think with a month left, he can hit, he can break Howard's record. I think he can do it.
Does he get to 60? If you think he can break it?
60? Why not?
Yeah, I'll say. I'll say he does break Howard's record. I think he breaks it by one. I think he falls short of 60. I think he finishes with 59, 10 home runs this month.
I think Kyle Schwarber hits 60 home runs, then lays down and goes to sleep in a sunbeam, and then wakes up for the Phillies' first round of the playoffs, which happens after a bye, so he's nice and rested.
I love it. That sounds wonderful to me. Who has the better final month, Justin? Ranger Suarez or Jesus Luzardo?
I bet it's going to be like, it's going to be the kind of thing where Ranger has the better month, and then doesn't have the better postseason, and Luzardo actually pitches better than him, like, significantly in the postseason. So I think it'll wind up being something like that, where everybody gets really goosed up about Ranger, and he like locks in and goes in full Ranger mode and doesn't carry them through September, but winds up giving people a lot of confidence about the postseason. But then, like, Luzardo winds up being this much more key figure in October.
Liz, what do you think? Who's better over the final month, Ranger or Jesus?
I'm going to say Luzardo, purely based on how he's been pitching lately. He's been great. The fact that he couldn't get the win during his last outing just crushed me.
Yeah.
It was just like, God, no. I mean, I and honestly, I don't even remember if they won that game.
No, but that was the Sunday night game.
Yep. Yeah, he pitched so well. He pitched really well, and it's been great to see him, you know, putting it all back together, which he's been doing periodically, you know, in fits and spurts since he had that awful period earlier in the season. But, you know, he, like, we know what he can do, and it's great to see him do it when we need him to. So I think he'll have a great final month, and I don't want to make any predictions about what that means for the postseason.
No, and I think the way Luzardo's throwing right now, as long as he stays healthy, he's throwing 98. I mean, 97, 98 miles an hour. He's just, his stuff is unbelievable. And I think Ranger is getting through some outings with some guile. Now, his velocity had been back up over his previous two starts before this last one against the Braves, but he's really good at kind of dealing with, well, not really good. Sometimes he's not really good at dealing with diminished stuff, but he has been a couple different times here late over the last few weeks. And I just think Luzardo's stuff is going to play up better here over the last month. So I think it's going to be, I think Jesus Luzardo is in line not only to have the best final month, but also to be the number two guy in the playoffs that this team really needs, which, you know, maybe it's not a break that Zach Wheeler got hurt, but Luzardo was headed to the bullpen. there's no doubt about the fact he was headed to the bullpen. So mm-hmm. it'll be quite interesting if he becomes this number two team's game two starter in the playoffs and has success there. Aaron Nola, Liz, does he have an ERA under four for the final month of the season?
I'm going to be ultra positive and say yes. For no other reason than I would like to be positive about Aaron Nola tonight. Right now in this moment, you've caught me at a moment where I would like to be positive about him. Do I have anything backing that up or supporting it? Your guess is as good as mine.
Nope, you don't this year.
Nope.
Justin.
What was the question? Go ahead, ask it again.
Aaron Nola put up an ERA under four for the final month?
Nope.
I agree. I don't think he does either, which really, really makes you wonder about his future. I mean, he's got five more years.
No, contract, stop it.
It just is what it is. I'm sorry. It is what it is. Justin, Phillies, again, have a 5.5 game lead entering Wednesday. Do they win the National League East?
Yeah, I feel fine about that. I was a little demoralized following the Mets series, but I don't know. Even then, it didn't really take that long to really get back on track. And I don't know. This is a team that's never really been off track for too long during this season. It's tough to imagine them really blown. And frankly, the Mets just don't play well enough for me to think like there's going to be a time where it's just like 1964. The team that's got to win keeps winning. And the team that's got to lose keeps losing. You know what a better example is? 2007, because that's for the Phillies and involves these two teams specifically. Why'd I even bring up 1964? That's ridiculous.
Silly thing you did.
I don't think the Phillies are bad enough, and I don't think the Mets are good enough for that to happen.
Yeah. Liz, what do you think? Do the Phillies win the division?
They do. I think they do. It feels wrong to say anything else. I can't imagine that future. So, yeah, they do.
And looking at the strength of schedule the rest of the way, the Mets have the fifth hardest schedule with a 5.19 opponents winning percentage, 4 against the Phillies, 3 against the Cubs. They got another game against the Tigers, 3 against the Padres, 3 against the Rangers, 3 against the Reds, and then just 6 games against the Marlins and Nationals, while the Phillies have the 12th hardest schedule with a 5.09 opponent winning percentage, 2 in Milwaukee, 3 against LA, 4 against the Mets, and 3 against Kansas City, but they also have 3 against Minnesota, 6 against the Marlins, and 3 against the Diamondbacks to finish up the season. So the Phillies do have an easier strength of schedule the rest of the way. Do the Phillies finish ahead of the Dodgers/Padres, whoever wins the NL West, do they finish ahead of the Dodgers for the number two seed and a wild card bye? The Pirates beat the Dodgers here on Tuesday, so that lead for the second wild card spot is now a full 2 games, Liz.
Wow. I think they can. I think...
Will they can. They can, sure. Will they, though?
And I think they will. I'll just pick one. They will.
That's what I wanted. Yes, good. They will. Good. Okay. Justin?
Stop smirking, Justin. Say what you're going to say.
That was nice. You got an opinion out of her. That's strong question asking.
Oh, shut up.
I agree. I think the Phillies will get a bye as well. I feel like not only should and would they, I think that they have to survive in the playoffs. I think the fewer playoff games they have to play, the better off they're going to be. This team specifically, I believe that about.
Yep. Like, I believe that if they get the wild card, it'll be like the first or second wild. I think if they get a wild card, it'll be the first wild card. And they host that wild card series. And they probably win that wild card series when they're playing all their games at home. But just, you're asking this offense, you're asking this rotation to just to do more. And they're an inconsistent team to win an extra series and win an extra 2 games. No, I agree with you. I think they need to. I think that first round bye is really important. And I do think they will hold off the Dodgers to win number two seed in the postseason. Now, you know, Brewers do not have a lockdown on the top seed, but they have a very comfortable 4.5 game cushion after the win on Monday against the Phillies. So, Justin, if you're asking a yes or no question, I think the smart money is no, that the Phillies don't overtake the Brewers and win the top seed in the National League. But if you could put odds on it, what percentage chance do you think the Phillies have of catching them?
Like 40.
Wow. Okay.
I feel like it's higher, but I'm not willing to go super high. But I don't know. I mean, we're coming off one win against the Brewers, which is just one win. But I think that what has always been true about this team remains true. And I think that they are fully capable of beating the Brewers. I just think statistically they're up against the wall here. And I think it's more of a timing issue than a talent issue. I think they could, if the season went long enough, overtake the Brewers. But I think with the time remaining, that's not going to happen. And nor should that be the focus of their efforts.
No. Well, I would agree with that. Liz, what do you think?
I would also agree. I'd probably put it even lower, like 30%. I mean, it's not like trying to catch a team in the NL East where you play games against them. Like, it's, you know, entirely separate. And so, like, they've got two more games against them, and they should make the most of those. But other than that, it's just sort of like scoreboard watching every night. Like, do they win? Do they lose? They have no direct impact on it other than continuing to win as much as they can. So, I mean, I hope they don't worry about it too much.
Yeah, like the Phillies still have four games against the Mets, and they control their own destiny in terms of like really putting them away in Philadelphia. But after these two games, there's very little interaction. And you look at the strength of schedule with the Dodgers and the Brewers. The Dodgers have the fourth easiest schedule the rest of the way. They get the Rockies and the Pirates and the Orioles and the Diamondbacks still. And then they have seven games against the Giants, three against the Mariners, and three against the Phillies. So the Phillies and Dodgers will play a three-game series coming up very soon, and that could also determine that number two seed for sure. And Milwaukee's strength of schedule, a little bit more difficult, but not as difficult as Philadelphia's. They have a .504 winning percentage against teams remaining. That's middle of the pack, 15th. So four spots down from the Phils. So again, not a big advantage for the Phillies or the Brewers in terms of strength of schedule there. So we'll see how it all shakes out there. But I would put the odds of the Phillies catching the Braves, we're actually probably close at around 10 or 15%. That's probably where I would have it. If the Phillies, I feel really confident in a 5.5 game lead over the Mets in the division. If I were the Brewers, I'd feel really confident with a 4.5 game lead for the best record in baseball. And the Brewers don't really need to worry about it because they're going to, you know, look at number one or two seed. That's a 6.5 game lead over the Dodgers for at least a bye. So they're in good shape, which, you know, you wonder too, will that take some of the energy out of them a little bit during the final month of the season, you know, as they are going to win the division easily and get that number one seed probably. But certainly problems you'd rather have than not have if you're Milwaukee. All right, let's finish things up with some final thoughts. Justin, any final thoughts from you tonight, buddy?
Two things. First one is we squeezed out another new episode of The Dirty Inning right before the end of August on Don Hurst and the 1929 Phillies. That one was authored by Trevor Strunk. So if you are a patron or not a patron, please go over to the Pit and Season Patreon and you can hear all about how bad Don Hurst was for the 1929 Phillies.
Can't
a lot
wait.
Of fun.
Can't wait.
The other thing is...
Oh boy!
I'm speaking now.
Wow!
To whoever at the Philadelphia Phillies makes these decisions, the Phillies and the New York Mets are about to play a series in Philadelphia for four games. It's a big series, important series between both of those teams. They both have things they want to do in that series. They both have statistical and standings reasons why they would rather be the successful team. They're very close to each other, geographically. Proximity, which means that a lot of times they'll be in each other's ballparks. And what I'm saying to you now is based on the recent history that I can't believe I've had to talk about on this show and many other shows before. But I'm telling you now, Philadelphia Phillies decision makers, that I'm aware of how little influence I have in this world of media adjacent commentary in which we live. But I will use every ounce of what that is to be against you if you for even 1 second in even some small way permit a New York Mets fan to throw out the first pitch at any of these games. Not only do I question your ability to market the team you work for, but your allegiance to the team you play for. I mean, this is simply not something that's done by people who care about what they're doing. And if I have to sit there and watch a New York Mets fan throughout the first pitch, whether they're wearing a Mets jersey, whether they're told not to wear any Mets gear, whether there's a group of people that, you know, bought out a whole section that's cheering for them or not, I don't care how much money you made selling tickets. I don't care what a win that is for your sales team. Do you understand that it's September? And what happens after this, and what happened last year in October, and what could happen moving forward, you need to realize what all of us have already realized for many years, our entire lives at this point, which is that the New York Mets don't get celebrated at Citizens Bank Park.
No.
That's just simply something that doesn't happen. No. So just put aside all of the marketing wins and all of the stuff that like is going on in the corporate aspect of running a baseball team. Just, I'm begging you. I know it's really hard to put it aside because for some of you, it's your entire lives, but put it aside and just understand that this is something that no one wants except the Mets. So just don't do me the favor of not letting someone into your house who considers it their job to disrespect it. Like, that would just, I feel like that it needs to be said is tragic enough, but it does need to be said. And all I'm saying is there's four games. I know this is going to be their last chance to do that. I really hope you've learned your lesson. I really fear that you haven't. So again, don't let this happen. I beg you. I beg you not to let this happen. Please.
And I want the Phillies to understand how gentle Justin's trying to be right now. It's he's saying it with the caged up rage.
That was very professional, I feel.
Of a father whose sons have been fighting all day, and then one of them just broke a high-priced lamp. Okay?
John is not speaking from experience.
I'm just imagining that this scenario could happen. But with the biting the bottom lip, entering quivering anger that you're trying to stifle, it's admirable, Justin, how you're holding back right now. Just and I know you're hoping not to have to unleash the battleships, but
right, which is what I was going to say.
I appreciate it.
Is that it's being, there's a reservoir being contained for, yeah, should this happen.
Right.
The reaction
will
be much differently. But I think a lot about the time when I was a kid and I overheard my dad just talking shop with some other dads and saying, like, yeah, I try not to, when I'm mad in the moment, tell them that, like, you're grounded for a million years, because you wind up having to back off of that because
right,
you're reacting
emotionally. Exactly.
And then
exactly.
And then what credibility do you have moving forward? You got to be able to, you know, to just, you know, focus that energy, develop the punishment, and then let them know what it is when you're in a more rational state of mind. And I feel like I've maintained that. Phillies, don't do it.
Push him.
Don't do this. You're not going to like where this goes. All right. It's not a threat, but you're not going to like
it. A promise.
It's a promise. All right, Liz, can you top that for your final thought?
I can't. So all I'll say is, if you want to hear Justin truly unleashed on this topic, head over to patreon.com/hittinseason and subscribe so you can listen to Absolutely Hammered, where you can swear and there's drinking, and Justin will undoubtedly let his true feelings be known, whether or not they do this. And I have to say, the Phillies just got swept by the Mets.
Room. Read the room.
That's the thing. I'm like, they just got swept. The amount of swearing I'm holding back whenever I talk about this. Yeah. We're a family podcast, and I can't do that anymore on the main feed.
Nope, not here on the WHYY feed. No, indeed.
Mm-mm. It's like, really understand, they just got swept by the Mets, their division rival, and the one team that could overtake them for to win the pennant. Like, what do I, if anyone is even thinking about this, if it's been brought up in a meeting any time in the last month, that person should be fired. I don't care who it is. Doesn't matter if they're the most valuable person. It's because they think that this is appropriate, that they thought it's appropriate at any point. That's all.
I'll say this.
Let me just throw in one thing real quick. One of the promotions or events that they're having during this Mets series, they're doing part of their Strikeout the Stigma panel discussions, the Phillies are, before this game on September 9th. And the subject is the positive impacts of social media. So I'm already concerned of where their heads are at.
What are we doing here?
What are we doing here?
Oh, guys.
Yeah. All right. We're going to leave it on that note.
Let's do it.
Look ahead to two more games against the Brewers here in Milwaukee. We'll see how the Phillies can finish off this series against a really good baseball team before heading home for a series. No, before heading to Florida for a series against the Marlins. But join us as we continue on this journey through this final month of the Phillies season that has got a lot of good baseball left in it. So I want to encourage you to tell your friends and family members about this podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. And if you want to watch the roundtable edition of this show, you can head on over to the WHYY YouTube page. Be a subscriber to the WHYY YouTube page, and then you'll get this show every time it hits the YouTube early the next morning after we record. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.